It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 47 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. This week we're going to do something a little different and talk about ourselves a lot.
Carson and I realized that we've had, you know, a number of guests on the show now, and we always ask them how they got started into X-Wing, and we've never really done that ourselves on the show, talking about kind of our origin stories. So we thought we might share a little bit about that.
But for those tryhards listening who only really care about us talking about the best lists, we're also going to discuss some of our thoughts on some unique upgrade cards to look at for upcoming regional events.
So let's get to it. So Carson, we've been playing X-Wing together now for a couple years. I started seeing you at tournaments and started seeing you do very well at tournaments about 2 years ago or so. But I know you're not originally from Minnesota and you haven't always been a part of this community. So could you tell me how you got into X-Wing, where you got your start?
Yeah, I got my start from my college roommate, Patrick, who showed me the link to the X-Wing thing. We played Warhammer 40K, a miniatures game. Mm-hmm. And we're like, oh, this is a cool Star Wars miniatures game. I watched the little tutorial video they had online and was like, wow, this looks pretty awesome. And the models were sweet. So I went to the store to get the starter set, and they didn't have any of my favorite ships, the Y-Wing. This was when Wave 3 had come out, and Wave 1 was out of print, and small ships were selling for $50 on eBay.
Yeah, there was a crazy time there where some of those early out-of-print ships were really expensive.
Yeah, your only option was getting it shipped from Europe. So I got a B-Wing, a Bomber, and we played some games with that. And it was pretty fun. And it was just kind of a game we would play when we didn't have time for Warhammer, because that takes a lot longer. That's a whole day that you have to dedicate to that. Whereas X-Wing, you can play during a lunch break between classes or something.
So when did you get into kind of the more competitive scene? You said you started around Wave 3. Was that about the time you started playing competitively?
No. I had contemplated going to an Imdar Alpha tournament, but thought, that might be just not fun. Tournaments kind of sounded scary and a little too competitive. It wasn't until I moved here and saw people playing at the Fantasy Flight Game Center that I thought, oh, that looks like fun. I'll probably show up to one of those.
And for those of you who don't know, the Imdar Alpha event was a pre-release event Fantasy Flight put on when Wave 4 came out. And basically, it was a tournament where you had a chance to win one of the upcoming Wave 4 ships before they got released. Wave 4 was when we saw the Z95, TIE Defender, TIE Phantom, and the E-Wing release.
Yeah, weirdly, like seeing those ships spoiled, I didn't think the Phantom looked that cool or good. The Defender, like, had threes on all of its stats, and that looked amazing. Did not quite appreciate how amazing the cloak mechanic was.
Well, I think it's definitely a very skill-influenced mechanic where you have to be very good at using it, but those who are very good at using that cloak mechanic really excelled at the game very quickly.
We also were not that big on arc dodging. When I just played with my friend, like, we would just... It's not that we didn't arc dodge, but at tournament play, I saw what arc dodging really was, whereas I had not really contemplated all the nuances of boost and barrel roll combined, or what the Phantom's decloak can do in combination with high pilot skill and barrel roll on top of that.
And that was probably fine, because shortly after that, in the Phantom Han Solo meta, there wasn't a whole lot of arc dodging to be had.
Well, if you weren't playing those lists, you got arc dodged a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, then in my first event, you know, I really thought action efficiency is going to be important. So I took Kyle Katarn and Dutch Vander, I want to say.
Oh boy, two.
It was either
great.
Dutch or Garvin. I think it was Dutch. You know, so we have those extra action ships and then backed up with two generic B-Wings. They might have also had fire control. Maybe they didn't. They think they might have just been generic blues.
Do you remember what your first matchup was at that first tournament?
Yes. So I had not played Advanced Proton Torpedoes, which I wanted to, but I was like, I just don't think I can pull it off. And then I played against somebody who set up two Advanced Proton Torpedoes against me. And I was like, oh, I wish I did the Advanced Proton Torpedoes.
And that may have been the last time anyone ever fired an Advanced Proton Torpedo in a tournament.
No, I fired him in tournaments. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. I know you love that card so much.
It's like five guaranteed hits, which at the time, now it doesn't seem like much, but at the time that was just above and beyond what anything was doing.
It's funny how things have escalated like that too, where now I like routinely see ships with primary weapon values and primary weapon attacks that are 4 or sometimes 5 dice, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's normal, right?
Right. If we didn't have more efficient cards like homing missiles or proton rockets, I think you would see advanced proton torpedoes be used more because at its time, it was the best way to get huge spike damage. Now, there's a lot better options.
So when did you start to get really serious about competitive X-Wing?
I don't know if there was ever like a step. I mean, it's just kind of like a gradual progression. Okay, you win your first local tournament and that's awesome. And then you're like, well, okay, I need to do that again. And then you get to a point where, okay, now I want to win a store championship or like just make the cut at a store championship. Right. That's exciting.
You start setting goals trying to, you know.
And Fantasy Flight has a nice progression system where you just easily get to escalate your goals. So last regional season it was, I would like to get a set of dice. And then I got 3. So now I definitely, the goal is to win a regional. That's a pretty big goal. We'll see if we ever get there. But yeah, that's where we're at now. So it's just kind of a slow stepping stone. I don't know if there was ever like, oh, now I want to be a competitive. Maybe when I started a podcast.
That definitely accelerates your interest in the game quite a bit.
Yeah, or definitely makes you invested in that aspect. The weird thing is I was never a competitive gamer for like tournament gameplay. I mean, that's why I stayed away from tournaments, was I did not like the design of, for your miniatures game, gearing your list out to, you know, win an event, whereas it was more let's make a squad, which is the same way I played 40K. Wasn't all about spamming the best unit. It was, okay, let's make a realistic army you could field.
Right. You appreciated the more thematic components, especially in a Star Wars themed game.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that was one of the big selling points of X-Wing was it's a thematic game and you could play whatever you wanted and still do well at an event.
Did you play any other tabletop games competitively prior to X-Wing?
No. I had gone to 1 or 2 organized Warhammer events and did not like the nature of the list I played against. All the people were fine, but I was just like, this doesn't quite feel like what I want the game to be.
Right.
For those of you who played Warhammer 40K, I played an Eldar list, but did not really have it mechanized or spamming Wraith units. I played a foot Eldar list, so just a bunch of Aspect Warriors and Guardians walking at you.
That's all complete gibberish to me, Carson. I don't know what any of that means.
Well, it's basically like the most broken team and the worst way to play them.
Okay.
For those who don't get it.
So you were,
but they look awesome and it's thematic.
So you weren't into that competitive scene for that game?
No. I enjoy the game, but I don't enjoy it competitively.
So what do you like most about the competitive scene in X-Wing? Why do you keep coming back to it?
Well, that's two parts. So initially why I liked the competitive scene of X-Wing was it was just so intellectually stimulating. Mm-hmm. You get all these new experiences, seeing how different players built their lists and how they interacted on the table. And then you're pitting yourself against them. So that intellectual pursuit of how do I beat them when they're creating this novel experience, in that challenge, I just found very rewarding, as well as just the list design. There's a lot within the X-Wing system that rewards and challenges list builders. Why I keep coming back to the competitive scene is I really enjoy the environment and the player base of the X-Wing game. It's a weird thing to describe where there's great players in every game, but there's just something about the collective group of X-Wing players that I think is pretty unique to gaming groups.
Yeah, I would definitely agree.
I more just show up to tournaments because I want to hang out with these people. It's just all around good times. And I think something about why I initially came to the tournament scene, I think that is echoed with a lot of the players. It's a cool game and they just enjoy playing it. And that it's like simple in what it's trying to accomplish. Okay, if you're losing a game, it's not going to be over. It's not going to take the whole day for you to lose. You can get over with it and move on to your next game. That's nice. All right, so let's turn the table. Tim, your turn.
Yeah, this is what people really want to hear, Carson. They don't really care about your background. They really want to know about me.
Well, not yet, but I think, you know, in a few years, this will be the original source of, okay, where did the Tim Dugan story begin.
Where did it begin? When I'm world champion in 2020. I'm just going to set that goal out there, you know, give me a couple years to build up.
Right.
I guess that's coming closer than ever. No, so I started with the game. I got the core set, man, as a gift. I want to say shortly or before or right around when Wave 2 came out, because I think those ships were available at my favorite local game store. I don't think I actually played the game until right around the time I started doing tournaments. Like, I had this core set sitting there. I love Star Wars. I just never seemed to touch it. I was always into board games, so I played a lot of other board games. And this was like, oh, it's two player. I usually am looking for more of the 3 to 4 player stuff.
Right.
Plus, miniatures games are always kind of on the upper threshold of nerddom. So you, even people you can convince to play board games, you're not always going to be able to get to play a tabletop miniatures game like this.
Sensing the judgment.
No judgment from me, of course. I thought it was a cool game. And then when I actually did finally play it, I kind of realized, wow, this is a really well-designed game. What I really appreciated about the game is that it kind of really did, to me, capture the essence of Star Wars. This kind of, what it would feel like to be in a Star Wars dogfight, where there's, even if you're losing, there's always a chance, well, maybe I'll get a lucky string of evades and then just have a really powerful, you know, 3 crit roll and just pop the enemy TIE fighter right at the last second. Like, there was that always tension to it where even if I'm losing, there's a chance I could just turn it around like the Rebellion would against the Empire.
Right. I think the game captures everything you want from those Star Wars dogfight scenes except for the TIE fighter engine sound. I think that's the only thing it doesn't quite deliver.
And you can get phone apps to do that, so I usually just sit it on the table and just start tapping those soundboard buttons. The other thing I really appreciate about the game beyond the Star Wars factor is that I think it's a really well-designed board game. I played a lot of board games. Before I played X-Wing a lot, I'd do board game nights like 3-4 times a week sometimes. And so I'd seen a lot of board game mechanics. And this game is beautiful in that it is so essentially simple. You know, you've got 4 very clear steps.
Two green tokens. They do kind of the same thing.
Yeah, but there's some nuance there. The other thing I really like is that it's not strictly about card text or remembering like triggers or timings, at least when I got into it. There was this huge visual element to it of like spatial reasoning and bluffing and anticipating your opponent's moves, where I'd sit there and I'd go like, okay, what kind of maneuver is he going to set here? Is he going to try and catch me with that surprise K-turn and flip around and then assume I'm going to blast past him, or is he just going to take it slow so that maybe I'll K-turn and drop right in front of him? A lot of nuance to that whole dial setting mechanic, which I really still think is one of the best parts of the game.
Right. Oh, okay. What play surface did you first play X-Wing on?
Oh man, pre-game mat, so they hadn't even released the standard game mats at that point. I was just playing on whatever surface I had available, which were usually either weirdly shaped or didn't have like clean-cut edges. So we just try not to fly near the edge of the board, just so.
So you'd like print out paper or?
No, just literally I would like set up, like on my kitchen table, just set up, you know, vague borders with books or whatever, just to represent the edge of the board. Okay. It never, flying off the board never really came up because I was not that good at the game, so I wouldn't take those kind of risky maneuvers.
We started on a coffee table that was like a 2x4.
Right.
So you engaged very quickly.
Oh, so you played the short way, not the long way on that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, then it would just be a narrow lane. That's not interesting.
Well, and it was kind of hard, too, because if you really wanted a 3x3 mat before Fantasy Flight released the official game mats, which are great, like you had to buy one from a vendor or find some company that was willing to print those vinyl mats out. And that wasn't always the easiest thing to do if you were just getting into the game and weren't aware of like where to find these things.
Right. I also just didn't even know that those third-party vendors existed for quite a while.
Yeah.
So how long had you been playing before you had your first tournament?
So when I actually started at least playing the game more casually, started buying my first couple expansions, was right before Wave 4 came out. So I probably played for a good, you know, 4 or 5 months just casually every couple weeks. And then as I started to get more into it, started collecting more ships, I became aware one day I was just at the Fantasy Flight Game Center playing the game with a friend, and someone was like, oh, you should check out the Twin Cities X-Wing Facebook page. Like, they, you know, set up tournaments or whatever. It's like, oh, cool. So I joined up with that. And then I found out, like, the day I joined, they were like, oh, there's a tournament at Fantasy Flight Games tonight. I was like, oh, I'll go check that out. I brought my, what was my first list? I brought what they called Bloody Daggers, but I didn't know it was called Bloody Daggers. It was 2 Dagger Squadron B-Wings.
Why did you pick the Pilot Skill 4 ones?
I, for whatever reason, I was like, oh man, this will give me an edge against the Pilot Skill 2, not having any idea what the metagame would look like there. So the first game I played against was against a local player, Matt Holland, and he was flying double Falcon. That was really big for a while, where you'd have Chewbacca and Lando Calrissian, and Lando would be passing free actions to Chewie, and I think they both had Draw Their Fire, the elite pilot talent, so they would pass crits to each other, so you like wouldn't be able to focus damage on one of them. And when I actually got to the table, he was like, oh, your list is actually pretty good against mine. You know, I have a lot of attack dice, low agility ships. And then I proceeded to just fly straight through the asteroid field and just get absolutely destroyed by these large base turreted ships. But I did have a really fun time learning. I think I maybe even won a game that night. Yeah, I think I might have won one of my three games. So that's encouraging.
You went 1-3 at your first tournament?
I think I did. I
went 2-2. So
okay. How'd you do at Worlds, Carson? Anyway,
we can play this game for a while, but we'll move on.
So then from that moment on, I was hooked, man. There were tournaments started happening a couple times a week, so I'd get involved with as many of those as possible. And it's just a really fun time. Like, the community was so welcoming and cool in Minneapolis, and I've met so many cool people over the years. A lot of them don't play X-Wing anymore, but we still, you know, connect up to board game and whatnot, or play Destiny, Star Wars Destiny. Ugh. Carson's not a fan of the Star Wars Destiny card game.
Dice and cards? It's too much. Okay, so going from a board gaming background into a competitive X-Wing environment, were there any skills that you got from your history of playing board games that you thought carried over into X-Wing?
I was always good at bluffing games, any kind of games where you had to kind of confuse your opponent or make them second guess what you're going to do, which I maintain is a big part of X-Wing, like setting those maneuver dials. And there's a lot of nuance to it, I think, too, where sometimes even how you look at the board, like how you crane your neck over the board and what areas you're looking at, can mildly influence what your opponent thinks you're going to do, you know?
Yeah, this, you're giving me flashbacks to when we played at Adepticon, or when I had beaten your list in basically all of our practice games.
I think like 5 out of 5 practice games.
And you've done like the same opening like every time. And then we sat down at round 5 where we're both at 3-1, I think. Mm-hmm. And you just do the completely different opening. You set it up the same and then
just completely different set of maneuvers.
And I was in panic mode after like turn 2.
Well, that's what I was going for. You know, I'd saved the good stuff for the actual tournament.
Yeah, definitely held on to that, and the poker face was there.
Yeah, I still think X-Wing, though, is a good like entry game for people who want to move from board games into kind of more serious competitive miniatures games, because it's maybe not the most sophisticated miniatures game you could get into, but it is very accessible, you know, for the widest category of people.
Absolutely. The basic mechanics are pretty simple. There's not that much nuance to the dice rolls compared to some other games. But that bluffing dial mechanic is something that I think, despite its other basic mechanics, makes it just as stimulating for those who come from a more complex miniatures gaming mm-hmm. background.
Yeah.
I think that allows it to maintain its level of interest for those players.
Well, and I think especially at this point, the game has become very sophisticated at the highest competitive levels. There's a lot of nuance to what kind of upgrades you bring in and how you fly your ships, what lists you bring, that I think it's great because it represents both ends of the spectrum, because you can enjoy the game at a very non-competitive level, just buy the ships you like, and it'll be reasonably balanced. You'll have a fun time flying all these cool Star Wars ships. And then at the opposite end, you can also get really into it, try to figure out all the little nuances and light advantages you can gain by putting different cards in your lists, and really appreciate the game design from that end.
Just a little spoiler for our second half, if we look at a card like Swarm Leader, where if you've already fired at my ships and I have decided whether or not I'm spending my evade tokens, that's an easy decision. But if you haven't fired yet and I'm activating Vessery with Swarm Leader, I have to decide, do I want to pull those evade tokens or save them for defense? Or will my ships be in range to have that shot to trigger? There's just a lot of interesting interactions there that I have to be thinking about when I'm making my decisions, which is what I want as a gamer, to have to make interesting decisions.
Absolutely. All right, Radio TCX patrons, it's time for our January raffle prize winner announcement.
this month we're giving away a TIE Striker in the Omega Ace extended art card.
To be eligible for this raffle, you had to become a patron during the month of December or prior to that. If you're interested in becoming a patron and being eligible for the February raffle, become a patron of Radio TCX by the end of the month.
You can do so by going on to patreon.com/radioTCX and signing up today.
All right, and here are our raffle winners. Winning the Omega Ace Extended Art promo card, we have Steve Bolton.
Congratulations, Steve.
And then winning the TIE Striker expansion, we have Hans Anderson.
Congratulations, Hans.
We will be shipping those prizes out to you shortly. And thank you guys and everyone who participated for becoming patrons of Radio TCX. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Now let's get back to the cast.
So the Minnesota Regional will be taking place this upcoming Saturday and Sunday at the Fantasy Flight Game Center in Roseville, Minnesota. We usually get a pretty good turnout at these events, so I'm expecting quite a showing both locally and hopefully we'll get some out-of-state people coming in too, which will be cool.
They're usually just a little above 100 players, I think, is our general player count, which puts it in the larger bracket of regional events. And it's definitely the largest one in the northern Midwest.
Yeah, so in anticipation of that, Carson and I thought we'd share some final thoughts on maybe some upgrade cards we're expecting to be very relevant at this regional event.
Okay, so I'm going to start with the obvious upgrade card, which is Swarm Leader from the TIE Striker expansion, which is 3 points. When you perform a primary weapon attack, choose up to 2 other friendly ships that have the defender inside their firing arc at range 1 to 3, remove an evade token from each chosen ship to roll 1 additional attack die for each token removed, and 3 points.
So anytime we see a new upgrade card like this come out, usually the first place we start to actually see it get applied to list is kind of to existing list archetypes.
Right, and this fits right at home with defenders who get those evade tokens for free. Very synergistic. Especially with Colonel Vessery, who has the ability to modify that huge attack.
I've actually already seen several local players try this out on like a triple defender list, and it has been very effective.
Right, so the defenders have the natural defensiness that's a real word, defensiness.
Okay.
that makes them the tier one strategy everyone's
right.
trying to beat.
Very hard to hit.
And then you also get crazy spike damage with Swarm Leader now just easily slotted in. So that's the baseline where Swarm Leader easily fits. But I think there's a lot of other strategies. Like, this card does not ask too much for you to get a lot of reward. I think there's definitely room for other lists to exploit this strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Though I think right now, popping Swarm Leader on a Colonel Vessery paired up with 2 other TIE defenders does not seem like a bad option.
Right. I mean, moving forward, I definitely want to try this on Kylo Ren just because that's a 4 attack dice ship with an EPT that is survivable. Yeah, you can put this on a Phantom, but the thing about Swarm Leader is that is usually target priority number 1. And if you're putting it on a Phantom, that means you're not going to have veteran instincts for your advanced cloaking device to trigger. So that's going to be a pretty easy target for your opponent to eliminate.
Yeah, it's almost an impossible sell to me to put anything but veteran instincts on a Whisper. But I think you're right, Carson, looking especially at the upcoming Upsilon class shuttle and the Kylo Ren pilot who does have an elite pilot talent slot on there. It kind of naturally lends itself to being that ship being paired with a bunch of TIE fighters who have the evade action. So you could easily be getting, you know, the native 4 attack dice on the Upsilon class shuttle combined with 2 additional attack dice from the Swarm Leader card. Could be really nasty.
Yeah, I know Minock half-jokingly mentioned using Swarm Leader on Omega Ace, which lets you spend a focus and target lock to turn all of the dice you rolled into critical results. So while TIE fighters don't have a huge dice pool to start their attacks with, Omega Ace makes Swarm Leader still a good option because it doesn't matter if you start with 2, you could get 4 or at range 1, 5 dice all turned into crits. That sounds like a pretty good attack.
Though it'd be pretty hard to set that up effectively, but I could see it happening.
But it's not that expensive.
I think the area where we probably won't see a lot of Swarm Leader, and I would love to be proven wrong on this, is ships like A-Wings, ships that already have very low attack values. because you've got a natural cap on the Swarm Leader card where you can only do it to two of your allied ship. You can only remove two of eight tokens. So at most, you're adding two attack dice. And if your ship's base attack value is already two attack dice, it's probably not worth spending all those defensive tokens to just get a four attack dice attack.
Right. If you could put Swarm Leader on all of your A-wings, I think that might be okay. And then just whichever one had the range one shot, you go for that attack. But because it's unique, I think it's hard for them to consistently keep one A-wing in a position where you want to be using Swarm Leader also.
At that point, you're probably better off just focusing on things like proton rockets or just other ships with higher attack values.
Absolutely. I think for A-wings, proton rockets, definitely a better option.
So right now, the metagame looks like if you want to compete, you're going to either need to provide really heavy spike damage, so a lot of attack dice that are fairly well modified in order to push damage through on these really defensive ships, or guaranteed damage coming from things like Connor Nets and the Sabine Wren crew. To that end, to pushing damage through, Carson, you were looking at another upgrade card?
Well, weirdly, I think this is a defensive upgrade card, but I'll get to that. So XX23S Thread Tracers, the one-point missile that's range 1 to 3, 3 attack dice, attack header focus. Discard this card to perform this attack. If the attack hits, each friendly ship at range 1 to 2 of you may acquire a target lock on the defender, then cancel all dice results. So the attack does no damage, but you get target locks for the attacker and all friendly ships at range 1 to 2 of the attacker.
And it's important to note here, too, that when you're triggering this card, the ships at range 1 to 2 of you that get target locks must be within range 3 of the target. Otherwise, they're not able to acquire the
target
lock.
Right, they still have to legally be able to acquire the target lock.
But it is different than a target lock action. They're not taking a target lock action. They're simply acquiring a target lock.
Now, some awesome things about this card. Attack focus is nice, but it's also, you don't have to spend the focus token, so you just have to have one to fire it. And where I'm looking at this is on two ships. First off, Darth Vader pilot, because Vader likes to have target locks, right? But getting that target lock set up initially is difficult because you want to either reposition or take defensive token actions, because Vader's an ace and aces without defensive tokens don't stay around long.
Especially since we're starting to see a lot more twin laser turrets pop up, and since Vader can't take auto thruster, he's especially vulnerable to those types of attacks, so he'd rather have the defensive tokens and not have to spend that turn getting the target lock.
Right, so here Vader can go focus evade, still fire the tracers, and then get that target lock for all future attacks. Another ship that can utilize this is the Inquisitor. Now, here you're definitely looking at it as more of a support card, because the Inquisitor wants to take target locks.
Just so that he can trigger his Tie V1 title. When he gets a target lock, he can get a free evade token.
Right. Now, in situations where there's nobody shooting back at you before you fire, it might be worth it to take one turn off of attacking for the Inquisitor to fire these tracers instead. What you get is target locks for your team. And actually, with the Tie V1 tile, when you acquire that target lock, you could then get an evade token and even then push off of that. Now, okay, why would you want to do this? Well, ships like Omega Leader really also appreciate those target locks, or that Vader next to your Inquisitor, you can give him a target lock if you adaptability him down to 8. Now the Inquisitor can set up Omega Leader and Vader to have their target locks. I particularly started looking at tracers for ships that would help Omega Leader get a target lock. Usually you could be okay just getting that target lock the first turn with Omega Leader, but when Dengars are using countermeasures to get rid of your target locks, that makes Omega Leader pretty tough.
Yeah, being able to acquire that target lock out of the normal sequence of play would really help you in that case.
But in this situation, if you have tracers for just 1 point on one of your ships, which are fine ships to fly, you're just adding 1 point to them. Now you have an insurance policy for your Omega Leader where, okay, countermeasures was popped, started combat. You could have Vader at 10 fire a tracer before Dengar shoots, put that target lock back on for your Omega Leader that Dengar has an arc.
So I can kind of get what you're seeing about this as a defensive upgrade, especially in a metagame where we're acknowledging that we're going to see a lot of Dengars and we're going to see a lot of ships that could really cause trouble for these target lock dependent pilots.
Right. And so Tracers is definitely a trade-off card where your attack is not doing any damage. But for ace ships who want to play the long game, that's usually fine to take off a turn of damage for that added survivability of using your actions not aggressively. You can use the defensive actions. Now your Omega Leader can go into the opening attack with focus evade token if another ship is then giving her the target lock, which is, I think, is a nice interaction. Now, not every list can afford that 1 point. I know right now, because there's so many upgrade cards, you got to be as efficient as possible, still make room for a bid, but 1 point, it's definitely something to look at.
And these are just a couple more additions to what is a growing list of very viable and expected cards to appear at the upcoming regionals. We've got, obviously, we've talked about them, Sabine Wren, homing missiles, all kinds of bombs right now, Ty X7, all going to be very relevant cards for the remainder of the regional season. We've talked about them to death, so we're not going to go into great detail today. But these are just more cards to be aware of, things that we expect to see in some capacity at these tournaments.
Okay, so Tim, what upgrade card do you think will make top four this weekend?
I think for sure we'll see at least a couple X7s. I'd be shocked if we didn't.
Ooh, okay, that was going to be my pick. Okay, I think we'll probably see at least one Zuckuss upgrade card in the top four.
Oh, yeah. Probably on a Dengar Bossk.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Regionals coming up this weekend, and we'll be back next week to tell you all about it. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you enjoy the show, please go on to facebook.com/Radio TCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please consider going onto iTunes and leaving a 5-star review saying what you like about the show and why other people might be interested in listening.
If you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx. All right, talk to you guys next week.
And good luck at your upcoming regional.